Hey, Bat Family, it's Inkiru here. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. If this is your first time listening, thank you so much and welcome to the Bat Family. If you're a returning listener, you know I love you dearly and I appreciate your ongoing support. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform as well as on our YouTube. It's free. And if you'd like to support our podcast financially with a one-time or monthly contribution of a dollar or more, please visit anchor.fm/BLDG Africa's Future/support. You can also find more details about that and more in our show notes or by following our Instagram page at Building Africa's Future, BUILDING Africa's Future. As usual, I invite you to join the conversation, and you can start by sharing this episode and our podcast with anyone that you think might enjoy it. Thank you so much once again, and happy listening. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Conversations from the Diaspora, Building Africa's Future podcast. And tonight I'm joined by a longtime friend. I've known her for at least maybe close to two decades of my life, which is crazy. Or maybe a little bit more than that. Her name is Omba Thomas. She was born in Democratic Republic of Congo and moved to the United States at a very early age with her parents and siblings. She found out that she was a DACA student after completing high school, which led her to postponing her education to raise a family. After a long immigration battle, she's now a permanent resident of the United States. Through her persistent drive, she recently completed her master's degree this past May and is now completing an internship at a local hospital with hopes of becoming a healthcare executive. So sis, thank you so much for joining us this evening and for sharing your story. If you can just say a few words of hello to our listeners.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Inkiru, for having me on the podcast. I feel very honored that you actually took the time to reach out and just want to hear my story. So I'm really happy to be here.
Yes. Thank you again. Because I don't know how much or how familiar you are with the podcast, but the podcast is really centered on the experience of, you know, immigrants, African immigrants, our different lived experiences, you know, how it is, you know, balancing, you know, the immigrant, kind of our immigrant upbringings and the different challenges that comes with that. And then, you know, living in a new country and navigating that. And then, you know, obviously when I saw your post, you know, for your graduation and everything, how you shared, you know, just the different challenges that you had to overcome, and especially as it relates to, you know, immigration and other things like that, I could imagine how, you know, that could be a challenge and how that might have affected you at different points growing up. So before we kind of get into like everything else, if you just wanted to maybe talk about that a little bit more.
Sure. I think it's a huge challenge being African and then growing up in America, because then you have to kind of find your place. And I think that's kind of been the theme of a lot of Africans that I've met, is trying to find your place and still being African yet still being American, and trying to assimilate in a culture that you don't know. Yet you don't want to, you know, you kind of, I think early on, you kind of try to identify with the American culture. And then the older you get, you start noticing, oh, there's actually something special about being who I am. And so later in life, you start trying to kind of accept, you know, who you are. And you go through this, I'm still going through it, honestly. You go through this phase of trying to learn yourself. And, you know, as you know, Inkiru, my name was Marilyn growing up. It's a couple of years ago that I ended up switching. I'm like, you know what? There's nothing wrong with being called Omba. So, you know, it's a time that just, I don't know, it's just some kind of progress that you go through as an individual, trying to assimilate and then trying to actually find your own identity.
Right.
So it's been a challenge, but nonetheless, it's been great.
Yeah, I love that, sis. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's actually one of our first questions. Just changing or accepting your traditional names. I know for a lot of us, in my case and in the case of my siblings, my dad was, you know, very intentional about giving us our traditional names. He didn't like the idea of any kind of, I guess, Eurocentric or anglicized or any type of name. He wanted us to bear like our traditional names. But I know for many African people, both from Anglophone or Francophone countries or just any part on the continent, you know, when they come to the US or other places in the world, they try to either, you know, parents might give their kids, I guess, like a Christian name or whatever, or some other type of name to help them maybe assimilate or adapt into their new environments a little bit better. So I know you just kind of touched on it, but could you just kind of explain, well, tell us a little bit more about the meaning of your name and why is it important for you to bear your name at this point in your life?
Yeah, so I was born Omba Marilyn Oteka. And so I have my traditional name and then my Christian name. So Marilyn is my Christian name. And so I was born a twin. And so in my culture, you know, there's two names that's given to a twin. It doesn't matter who's first. Whoever's first is Omba, and whoever's second gets Shako. So I have a twin brother named Shako. And so I was first born twin. I soon found out that, like, in Kenya, my name actually means to pray. But I never knew that. So, like, Omba to me has always been, they've always explained to me that it just means firstborn twin. So that's where the name comes from. And I don't really know exactly the meaning other than what I've been told. But I was really surprised to learn that my name means to pray in Swahili. So
nice. So is your name of Swahili origin or is it Lingala or?
It's actually Tetela. I'm from a very small tribe called the Tetela people. And we speak the Tetela language. And so anytime you see an Omba, there's always a Shako. So if you see a Shako, it's always an Omba. So, you know, Omba is always the first, Shako is always the second.
Wow, yeah. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. Well, sis, I mean, now that you kind of started on that, you know, one thing that I'm always interested in, like whenever I'm talking to, you know, people from the African diaspora, I love kind of hearing about, you know, upbringing, because I know when it comes to culture, especially, you know, coming to the country at such an early age. You came as a teenager, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I was actually 8 years old.
Oh, okay.
Very young.
Yeah, because I know for, you know, many of us, when we come here at like a really early age, a lot of times, you know, there's like a disconnect when it comes to some cultural or traditional things that, you know, maybe if you had stayed in your home country until like maybe like your late teens or 20s, you might have held on to a little bit better versus... when, you know, you come as a child, like we both did. So if you can maybe kind of share a little bit more about like your upbringing and maybe navigating like different things, like going to school and like maybe speaking a language at home or just like a few things like about those kind of cultural differences that you had to like address at such an early age.
Yeah. So when I was growing up, my parents, when we first came to the States, my dad was very adamant about us learning the English language. Mm-hmm. So in our home, my parents speak like four different languages, where I only spoke my village language. So I only spoke Tetela. Mm-hmm. And so growing up, I only spoke Tetela at home. And then when I started school, you know, I started learning the English language. So my dad was really adamant about us learning English. So he actually told us he didn't want us speaking my native language in the house. He wanted us to speak, you know, English. So the issue with that is eventually we kept speaking English and in the long term, we lost a little bit of our, you know, ability to speak our native tongue. So even though my mom still spoke to us in our native tongue, we lost a lot of it because I was raised in I'm a Francophone country. So there was a lot of French spoken around me. I understand some French, but I'm not great like when it comes to speaking it. So, a lot of things growing up, my parents kind of wanted us to assimilate to the American way to kind of understand like how Americans did things and all these other stuff. So we didn't have a clear traditional way of doing things. My parents didn't really stress the importance of actually preserving our culture. I think as immigrant parents, you're not thinking about that being anything that's really important because you're trying to create a life for your children. You're trying to go to work. You're trying to do all these things. So in the long term, what happened is I lost a lot of my own. I feel like I didn't get the opportunity to actually experience more cultural things. Hmm. The only things that I could say was maybe went to like a lot of weddings and got together with cousins. But anything that involved learning the culture and kind of accepting who we were was never stressed in my home. That's the one regret that I wish I had. I wish I knew my culture even more, because it made it easier to adopt the other culture and just kind of run with it, you know? And like I told you earlier, and then later in life, you find, oh, there's actually something special about being African.
Exactly.
And that's when you start kind of identifying with your culture and you start looking at more. Like, I started reading books about history of Congo and everything else. And I'm like, I want to learn more about where I'm from and who I am. And I can ask my parents, but even they don't really have a historical, you know, perspective about the country. So you find yourself trying to kind of learn about your own culture because you really didn't grow up learning it.
Right. Right. I mean, that's very powerful. And that's something that I think many of us in the diaspora kind of go through, like as you become older, like in your 20s and beyond. I feel like those years, like, you know, late high school, like teenage years, like that transition from like high school to like maybe college for most people or whatever the case may be. That's when people start to like, because growing up, being African wasn't something that, you know, we desired, like, because growing up 90s, 2000s, it was always like, oh, you know, African, you know, whatever, like all of these sorts of like negative, but now being African is like,
now it's a thing to be, like, you see it with the fashion, you see it with the music, African, it's like, now everyone want a piece of the African culture, and now it's cool to be African, you know what I mean? So it's come a long way, because growing up, it definitely was not that. It was, I mean, you remember the names we were called.
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure you heard some of those similar names, and it's just like, you didn't want to be identified as African. Like, if they ask you, like, no, I'm from Charlotte. Like, like, no, you're not.
Man. I know. Oh, man. I'm actually happy that you said that, because I know, you know, obviously, because we kind of grew up, like, together in our church and everything else like that. So I know, like, at some point, like, when you all were, because you were in your 20s, I think, that time, and I was, like, in my teen years.
Yeah.
I saw you and, like, other people that were around you as the cool African cousins, if you want to call it that.
Oh,
because
my gosh.
I feel like you guys were, like, very much in tune with, you know, your Africanness. And, you know, for me, being a teenager that at that point, it was always nice to kind of see, you know, your fellow young people that you look up to, kind of having this like love for the culture, you know, in every aspect. So I thought that was really beautiful. And I think, like, to kind of go back to your point about maybe some of our elders, like our parents and other people in their generation, why they maybe didn't want to teach the language or teach some cultural aspects because of maybe conflicts in the home country or just other things that were going on. But I think, you know, for us now, like you said, as you've grown up into adulthood and everything, you are being more intentional about like seeking out that information and, you know, learning it for yourself. Like, how would you say that you like pass that on maybe to your children or just in your everyday life? How do you incorporate your culture?
You know, the funny thing is, because I think actually starting at the church that we started kind of opened up my eyes to see other African countries. For the longest, it was just me, my parents around Congolese people. And so when we started going to the church and there were other people, other African, like, I was like, oh, there's a whole world of Africans out here that, and so it made me proud to be around other Africans because I felt like they were my age. We were kind of in the same place in life. And so it just that's where my pride started. You know what I mean? And because I was around other Africans. So now as an older person, you know, this was like 15, 20 years ago. For my children, I'm intentional about the music that I listen to. Like, I play my music all the time, even dancing. Like, you've seen some of my videos on, you know, on Facebook. My dance is an African dance. Like, it started in Angola. And so, like, I try to incorporate everything African, even my clothing. Like, when I wear clothes, I want to show that I am African. So, like, my seamstress is from Kenya. You know what I mean? Like, just being intentional about even support, like going to African restaurants. I'll take my kids to African restaurants so they can at least get different flavors of Africa. It doesn't necessarily have to be Congolese, but just to show them that Africa is so rich in culture and different varieties of people that it's not just my people, you know? So Right. That's what I try to do.
I love that. I love that. That's very beautiful. So I know, like, when I talk to my mom sometimes, because again, we came to the country like around the same time. I just want to hear from you, like, what are some of the, I guess, biggest changes or things that you've noticed, like, from the time you came to the country, like maybe just the city or the country or the world, I guess, from that time till now? I mean, that's a very broad question, but what are some, I guess, notable things, like looking back at Charlotte in 1996 or so, 95 to 2022?
Yeah, Charlotte was very, you know, it's changed in so many ways, but it kind of has kind of stayed the same. Like, if you grew up on the east side of Charlotte, I was immigrant central. Like, right. That's where all immigrants stayed. And even though it has changed slightly to where it's more Hispanics in that neighborhood, the Africans have kind of moved out. We kind of moved away from just being in one area. Now we're everywhere. So that's changed just a little bit. You know, I mean, obviously traffic patterns have changed.
Oh my gosh.
Charlotte is crazy with this traffic. It's just crazy. But what I've noticed is that more acceptance of people who are different. You know what I mean? Because I think Charlotte, they say like 100 people move to the city every day. So now we're kind of like a melting pot. Now, we don't really have an identity because there's so many different people that's come into the city. And with that comes like more awareness and being acceptance of other people where, you know, you could go to a store. And I remember being young and going to any stores and it could be any stores. And I'll be with my mom or my dad. And they spoke with a really heavy accent, you know, and I, you know, I saw the difference in how they treated my parents because they had an accent, like, then, like, getting loud, just so, what are you saying? Like, no, you can hear me, you know, and so all these things kind of made you, like, question, and there's times that I had to stand up for my parents. I'm like, excuse me, I can speak English pretty well, and this is what they're saying.
Right. They kind of
have that, but nowadays, I think there's more acceptance of people and different cultures. I mean, I don't think we're completely there, but it's a little better than where it was.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I can totally relate to that, like, on a very deep level, like having to, like, speak up for, like, you know, my mom, because I know a lot of, she depends on me, like, heavily for, like, a lot of things. And I think, like, they just become dependent on you, like, as you grow up. Like, obviously they took care of you in childhood and everything, but, like, now, like, that you're in a position, you know, you've matured and everything, you can kind of do the same for them. And like you said, even as a child, you had to do that. I mean, I think that's a very integral part of the immigrant experience. speaking of the, I guess, the immigrant experience, if you can just kind of, you know, of course, to your own comfort level, like if you can just kind of share a little bit more about your immigration story, like coming from Congo to here, and if you can kind of tell a little bit about that.
Sure. Before I came to the United States, I lived in a very small village. Like, if you can imagine what you see on TV, usually you have the hut, you know, on top of a hill, and then you have the trees behind. That was me. That was like, I have pictures. So I grew up in the hut, and then shortly before I moved to the States, I moved to the city for about a year. So I lived in a city for just very briefly. And then I came to the States when, you know, I think it was 1990. So I've been in the States for 32 years now. And coming to the States was really, I mean, at that age, you have this view and this thought of what you expect it's going to be like when you move to the United States. Like, you almost feel like it's like this magical place. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're going to go there. Because I remember when I moved to the city with my uncle, because we lived at his house, he had a butler. He had drivers. He had all this stuff because my uncle was pretty well off. So I'm thinking, when I get to the United States, we're going to have all these things. And I remember having this very same conversation with my mom. I was like, when we move to this United States, are we going to have a driver? We're going to have all this other stuff. And you know, you're expecting it because you're going to a better place, right? So we get here and I'm looking around like, okay, where the heck is the butler? Where's the driver? and you're like, wait a minute, this is not what I expected. You know what I mean? Because you feel like you move into this magical place and you have all this stuff in place and you don't have any of that. And you see your parents going to work every day and you're staying home with your siblings and you have to watch your siblings, you know? And then, you know, you're living in a 2-bedroom apartment with your parents and four, you and your three siblings are in a room. Like, that's how we grew up. Like,
right.
Very humble beginnings and not having much of anything. And we had a car that broke down every so often. Like, you know what I mean? So you move from just this life of luxury in Africa in your uncle's house and then coming here to the States, you're like, what the heck just happened?
Right.
And so like that was quite a change. I mean, as an 8-year-old, you're thinking, this is not what I expected.
Right.
You know, it's different, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, that brought back so many deep memories. Same. I think it's so funny because we all have, I mean, obviously we have different experiences, but there's so many similarities within those experiences. 2-bedroom apartment, 3 other siblings.
Right, right. What? Maybe 2 beds, sharing your beds with your siblings. I'm like, yeah, this is life.
Oh, man.
So,
would you say that growing up, like, you and your siblings were really close as a result of that? Or did you have, like, a lot of fights?
Absolutely. We were in the same bedroom, and it was myself, my twin brother, and my 2 other sisters. We shared a bed. I think it was 4 of us laid out in 1 queen size bed. I don't know how long,
man, life. For,
but you know, it was nice. You get to learn and love your siblings a little bit more. Mm. So
yeah, I love that. So Liz, if you can talk about how your background, I guess, influenced your interactions with the world. And I mean, I know we talked about this earlier, but would you say that your upbringing influenced the way you raise your children?
Absolutely. The one thing that I really appreciate my parents for is because I'm pretty sure you remember having to take ESL classes, English as a second language classes. So I had to go to a school that was very diverse. Mm. And so because of that, I had a lot of Hispanic friends. I had a lot of Vietnamese friends, Asian friends, just overall. And so growing up in a school that had all these different races and all these different people just kind of made me appreciate diversity even more.
Right.
I think I got the chance to meet a lot of different cultures and a lot of different people from different backgrounds. And it, like, I think that really solidified who I am as an individual, because if I go anywhere and it's just all Black people, I don't feel like I fit in. If it's just all white people, I don't feel like I fit in. But if there's a mix of people,
yeah,
then I feel like I'm right at home.
I can relate. Totally.
And so, like, that's what I try to always teach my kids, that the world is such a different place. You should be able to get along with everyone. You know, you can't just be around your own people.
Mm.
You know, there's beauty and diversity. I think right now every organization is trying to get on with the DEI.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I'm like, right. I already had that.
Right.
I've been there. I've done that. So, like, I always tell my kids to always, you know, be kind, be gentle. And if you see someone who's different, who might not speak the language, go up to them and speak to them and just offer, you know, yourself to be a friend, because you just never know.
Right. You know? So. Yeah. That's powerful. So I guess, what would you say were some challenges or mistakes that happened along the way as it relates to, I guess, your immigrant experience or immigration related stuff? And I know many Americans who are uninformed, they always think that it's an easy process and people should just, you know, everyone should just go about citizenship legally, and like they make it seem like it's a very simple or easy task, not realizing the many hurdles and expenses that people go through. So if you can just kind of talk a little bit more about that and how it felt, I guess, finding out about your DACA status, you know, after you graduated.
Yeah. So the crazy thing is, like, my story is a little crazy. There's so many ups and downs, but I just think our faith is what kept us here. So when we came here, we came because, you know, of so many different factors. You want to go to a different country so you can do better for yourself and your family. And so when I came here, I came as a student. I was supposed to go back, but my parents decided to keep us here. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to send you back home. So we were here. We were here to stay. And it was high school that one of my cousins, my older cousin, was like, do you know that you're not supposed to be here? I was like, what do you mean? I didn't know anything about this. Come to find out, there was a deportation order for me and my siblings. And my, you know, unbeknownst to me, my dad had been fighting immigration battles to keep us here since we came. So as soon as we came here, he enrolled us in school. He did all these things, but he was in the courts left and right. Like, I didn't know anything of this. Yeah, I didn't know any of it. Like I said, until my high school, when I graduated high school. And so what that meant is, like, we were here as visitors and we were supposed to be deported. And, you know, during the, when was the 9/11?
Mm-hmm.
During 9/11, that's when things got really ugly. Like, I got really, really scared because I learned that they were trying to deport every immigrant. And because I knew that I was not, you know, legally here, I knew that I could be, it could be a traffic stop and I could just be gone. The funny thing is my mother ended up being in ICE detention center. Mm-hmm. She was there for like a whole year and a half. Usually when you're going through that process, you're not coming back.
Wow.
God just, because of God's hand on our lives, she was able to come out. And shortly after that, we were still in the courts. We still have to go through reclassified as refugees because my country has war, like all, you know, Congo is really just unstable. Mm. So we ended up being reclassified as refugees. And afterwards, I tried to apply to change my status to a permanent residence. I was denied. You know, all my other siblings got, you know, they got their stuff and they became permanent residents. I was denied and I didn't understand why. So it took 10 whole years for me to actually go through the process of having to reapply and to have to change my status because I was underneath my father. I had to become my own separate entity in order to start the application process all over again. So it was just like, it's not something that you can just file a report and then it's done. Like you can't just put an application in and you're approving it's it. So it took me for a long time. I've been here for 32 years and just this year is when I got my permanent residence. So it's not like, you know, you can just say, hey, I'm just go ahead and apply and it's done. It's not a done deal. It could be Jim looking at your paper and something's wrong. He just denies it. Like I don't know why I was denied other than the fact that I was underneath my father and I no longer qualified underneath my father. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not simple.
Hmm. Okay. So, if you can just kind of share, you know, who are some people or maybe some agencies or organizations that helps you in the immigration process?
Sure. So when I was taking a few classes at UNCC, I met this guy. I'm kind of upset that I can't remember his name, but he was telling me that he was a child soldier and International House kind of helped him with getting his immigration stuff in order. So I was like, oh, okay, I need some help. So I went to International House in Charlotte and they've been so instrumental in getting my stuff expedited, getting everything done. It took 6 years, but guess what? They got it done. Mm. So I'm really grateful that, you know, someone else told me about International House. So if you need anyone who's going to help you and walk you through the steps and the process, they're just phenomenal, you know.
Yeah.
I owe it all to them because they did a really phenomenal job. And they didn't really charge me much because I wasn't making much money at the time. And, you know, so they really helped with the finances as well as all the immigration legal advice that I needed.
Right. Yeah. So it's so great to have like these nonprofit organizations. Cause I think for many immigrants, especially people of our parent generation, a lot of times they don't know about these resources. So it's great to know that. There's so many, like if you want or need the help, there's so many organizations that are willing to do it for low cost or free.
Right.
So I guess in line with that same question, what is some advice that you would give to those who are still navigating the immigration system or thinking of relocating, you know, from their home country to the U.S. or to any other, you know, country like that?
I mean, you know, the funny thing is like I can't take any credit other than my faith in God and how he continued, like when it looked like we were losing, he literally kind of continued to kind of pull us up. So prayer is very powerful, you know, and just being patient, because like I say, it took 6 years just to get my stuff to be approved.
Right.
Prayer and patience, you know, it may not seem like it and it might look like a long journey ahead, but it'll be worth it to just go through the process because at the end, there's so many more doors that are open to you. You know what I mean? Like being able to get financial aid and being able to, so you can go to school, you have to just think about all these things that benefits you to actually go through that process. So
yeah,
yeah, those are the two main things that I would just say. Just pray about it and just be patient. Just let God do his thing.
Right. That's beautiful. That's very beautiful. Would you change your experience for anything?
You know, that's the one question that, you know, you think about it and you're like, if I did change anything, I won't be the person that I am today.
Mm.
Perseverance and the dedication and just this striving to just be the best version of you. To live in America is an opportunity to actually advance yourself. Like, no one should have an excuse to stay where they are, because we live in a country where anybody can become anything, you know? Sure. And so I won't change anything, because it's made me the person that I am today. And I'm very grateful for my experiences, because my story is going to help someone else. Right. So being able to stand in the gap for someone and just be able to be that inspiration, I would do it all over again, you know?
I love that. That's very powerful. Yeah. Well, sis, I mean, just to kind of like wrap things up a little bit, because I do like to always kind of bring it back to, you know, the next generation, you know, the future of, you know, the continent, you know, with, in this case, obviously being your children. So like, I guess, what is one wish that you have for them, or one thing that you desire for them that you didn't have, and that you, I guess, are pushing for in their own lives and for their, you know, future children as well?
You know, that's the, you know, I think when I think about my life and the things that I wish I had early on is just identity, like understanding identity early on and learning yourself, learning your, you know, just being self-aware and just understanding the value in being you. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Not trying to be like Adam over there, being like Jesus or whoever it is the case, but just accepting yourself and just, you know, accepting yourself as who you are and just learning to learn more about yourself and enjoy the process of where you are and who you are. And that's what I try to tell my kids. Like, there's only one you. So if you're busy trying to be like somebody else, who's going to be you? You know what I mean? So it's just, that's the one thing that I wish my parents stress. Just the pride in being who you are and just going along with that. It saves you a lot of headache.
Yeah. I love that. And that's so beautiful, sis. I really do appreciate, you know, this time that you've shared in your experience, and I'm, you know, so happy for you. Congratulations again on, you know, just everything as far as, you know, your degree and, you know, the whole immigration battle and, you know, coming out on the other side. It's definitely a wonderful thing. And, you know, you've always been someone that I've looked up to as a strong person, like mentally, physically, and just, you know, obviously physically, you've always been like body goals, but you know, you've always been like a great inspiration. I'm so happy that, you know, you were willing to share, you know, in your experience. And I hope that, you know, people who listen to your story would be inspired. I'm sure they'll be inspired by it. Is there any way that people can follow you in your academic and professional journey, and what whatever your next steps might be, or anything that you might have, I guess, as advice?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you. I think what you're doing is really important, because you're kind of bringing back the identity back. You know what I mean? Just kind of letting us know, like, it's beautiful to be who you are. And just there's such a world out there of all of us who are trying to live this life in this country that we've adopted as our own. So it's like, it's really beautiful what you're doing. So I just want to commend you.
Thank you.
And, you know, if anybody wants to follow me, I'm on Instagram. I guess they call it handles. That's how I know I'm getting old. It's just OMOTEKA. It's just Omba Marilyn Oteka. Omoteka at Instagram. I don't know. And then I am on LinkedIn under Omba Tejan Thomas. So I would love to have anyone following me and just seeing the journey, because I post every week on LinkedIn about my internship. So I'm kind of doing a departmental, trying to shout out each week that I visit all the departments. So I would be happy to see any new faces.
Love it. Well, I'll definitely be sure to send them your way. And thank you again, sis. I really appreciate this time.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
You too. Hey, Bat family, thank you so much once again for tuning in to today's episode. I hope that you enjoyed our conversation today. I would love to know your thoughts and any feedback that you may have on this particular episode, this particular topic, on what my guest and I had shared about her experiences, and if you can relate to any of the things that she shared about the immigrant experience as a first generation immigrant to this country. Please feel free to leave us a voice message, or you can comment on our promo image. You can find us on our Instagram at Building Africa's Future. Please go to the links in the bio to find out about how you can purchase our new merchandise. We do have new shirts available for $25 all the way up to $30. We would love for your continued support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. And as usual, I hope that you stay well. Thanks, Bat Family.